Hi. We start with a very brief roundup of the week's top stories from Physicians First Watch, read by First Watch's editor Amy Herman, and then we chat with Rishi Wadera about hospital readmission rates in the U.S. and why they may not be giving a true picture of things. Here's the news.
Here are the top stories of the week from Physicians First Watch. First, a Veterans Affairs study finds that intensifying blood pressure regimens for older adults at hospital discharge may not always be the best idea. Among those admitted for non-cardiac conditions, intensified treatment was linked to serious adverse events and didn't seem to reduce cardiovascular events. Next, the American Heart Association now says that prescription omega-3s are safe and effective for lowering triglycerides. In particular, the group recommends 4 grams a day of prescription eicosapentaenoic acid, better known as EPA. But patients should first try changing their diet and exercising. Elsewhere, the CDC continues to investigate reports of severe lung disease tied to vaping. There are currently over 150 suspected cases across 16 states. No cause has been identified. Next up, a new guideline should make many more women eligible for BRCA mutation testing. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force now says primary care clinicians should do a brief BRCA risk assessment for all women with a personal or family history of breast, ovarian, tubal, or peritoneal cancer. Women whose ancestry is tied to BRCA mutations should also be assessed. And researchers in Iran report that a polypill containing 4 drugs helped prevent cardiovascular events in adults. The pill contained hydrochlorothiazide, aspirin, atorvastatin, and either enalapril or valsartan. And finally, a meta-analysis finds that osteoporosis drugs are not associated with reduced mortality risk. The researchers say the drug should only be recommended for reducing fracture risk. And that's it for today. Stick around for Joe Elia's latest clinical conversation.
The Hospital Readmissions Reduction Program, begun under the Affordable Care Act in 2012, aims to reduce hospital readmission rates for several common conditions like heart failure and pneumonia. Hospitals with high readmission rates within 30 days of discharges for those conditions can be penalized up to 3% of their total Medicare reimbursements, giving hospitals an incentive to improve discharge planning and quality of care in general. Dr. Rishi Wadera and his colleagues examined Medicare data spanning the years 2012 to 2015. They looked at readmission rates for pneumonia, heart failure, and heart attacks, yes, but they also looked at all revisits within 30-day periods among some 3 million discharged Medicare patients. Those revisits included readmissions as well as treat and discharge encounters in the emergency department and stays in observation units. And bear in mind that those last two don't count as hospital readmissions and thus don't put hospital reimbursements at risk. Dr. Wadera is a health policy researcher with the Center for Outcomes Research in Cardiology and a cardiologist at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and Harvard Medical School. Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Dr. Wadera.
Thank you for having me.
You studied readmissions among those 3 million discharged Medicare patients, but you also counted their revisits, so-called, in the 30 days after discharge. In other words, the revisits count readmissions, they count time spent in the emergency room, and they count time spent in observation units. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. So when looking at first revisits, you came up with an upward trend of about 16 per 100,000 visits. But the pure readmission rate was trending lower by about 13 visits per 100,000. And much of that, though, was offset by increases in treat and discharge visits to the emergency room and stays in observation units, which, as I said, don't count as readmissions and thus aren't penalized. Those two other things, the treat and discharge and stays in observation units, were increased by 22 per 100,000 discharges. It's not a comparison with a previous period, it's a trend. Is that right? So in other words, you're measuring a trend upward or downward over the 45 months or so of your observation period. Is that right?
Right. So, you know, our study period encapsulated the beginning of 2012 through the end of 2015. And during that period, the Hospital Readmissions Reduction Program, as of October of 2012, began financially penalizing hospitals based on their readmission rates. So we thought, you know, that time period was appropriate to try to understand what was happening to not only readmission rates within 30 days of discharge, but also total hospital revisit within 30 days of discharge.
So people have marked that as a success. I mean, they say, look, you know, hospital readmissions are down, but you're the skunk at the garden party. You're saying, but look at all the revisits in 30 days after discharge, right?
Right. I mean, this has really been a controversial program, even when it was established. It was first established in 2010, and then the program began imposing penalties in 2012. And, you know, frontline clinicians who take care of patients every day don't love this program because the idea of building financial incentives to not readmit patients, particularly patients who might benefit from inpatient level care, hasn't sat well with the folks like myself and others who take care of these patients every day. And, you know, a few years ago, when early data about this program started coming out, what early research suggested was that there had been sort of this dramatic decline in readmissions associated with the program. What our study suggests is, yes, there has been a modest decline in readmissions, but patients are actually coming back to the front doorstep of a hospital more now than they did prior to the program imposing penalties. And if you think about the spirit of the program, the intent was to push hospitals to improve discharge planning, care transitions from hospital to home, and post-discharge care to reduce the likelihood that a patient would come back to the hospital in the first place. And so what our data basically suggests is that either hospitals aren't really implementing those programs, or they are and they just haven't worked, because patients are coming back more to the front doorsteps now. And, you know, and I think a point that's important to make that's connected to that is that this notion that this policy has been a dramatic success has really been anchored on our tunnel visioned measurement of readmissions. But what our data actually suggests is that maybe what hospitals have done to make their readmission rates look lower is just more aggressively manage patients in ERs and prior to sending them home or as observation stays and then sending them home, which is, you know, that's a separate issue, whether that's good or bad, but that's not necessarily what the program intended.
A cynic like me might come away from this thinking, ah, the hospitals have figured out a way to game the system. Is that terribly unfair, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people refer to it as gaming. I think that when policies from the top come down in a sort of top-down fashion, hospitals always have to try to figure out the quickest, most effective way to respond. And if you think about it, it's probably much easier and from a financial standpoint, a hospital financial standpoint, more strategic to say, well, let's just triage patients who come back to the hospital a little differently. That strategy is probably easier to roll out than, you know, meaningful quality improvement initiatives that dramatically improve transitions of care and discharge planning and post-discharge care. So, you know, I think hospitals, when they're told where, you know, this policy is coming down and it's going to have financial implications, I think just try to do the best they can to try to do what policymakers are asking them to. But yes, I would argue that maybe that shift in how patients are triaged when they come back to the hospitals is not really in the spirit of the program. The spirit of the program was really to reduce the likelihood that patients would come back in the first place. And that requires a different type of strategy in terms of quality improvement.
Those declines in readmissions were exceeded by the increase in treat and discharge visits to the ER and observational stays. So it's all shifting in that direction, isn't it?
Exactly. So, you know, again, what we're seeing is that since this program has been in effect or imposed penalties, there really hasn't been a change in the rate at which patients come back to the hospital after discharge. It's just that we're not measuring the other types of revisits that are going up, and we're only focusing from a policy perspective on a readmission, which is going down, basically because we're just shifting how we triage patients when they come back. And like you said, that's resulted in an increase or an intensification of efforts to treat patients in ERs and sending them home rather than potentially just readmitting them like we might have prior to the program.
And you say that at one point that the drop in readmission as a measure of improved quality could be illusory. So, you know, having said that, you propose that if you really want to measure quality of, hospital care quality, then you ought to be measuring all these revisits instead of just the readmissions.
Right. I mean, the financial implications of this program are quite large because hospitals across the U.S. to date have been penalized $2.5 billion by this program. Mm-hmm. And the types of hospitals that have really sustained disproportionately been penalized by this program are safety net hospitals that tend to care for vulnerable populations, our sickest patients, patients who are at high social risk. And so, you know, one important question is this program actually measuring quality of care, or is it simply measuring a hospital's ability to shift patients and treat them in ERs and as observation stays? One might argue that higher revenue hospitals that have larger ERs and a greater capacity to say someone is an observation stay are doing better in this program simply because they have the resources to make all those changes than hospitals that don't. But those types of changes, you know, don't necessarily reflect differences in quality. And so, you know, one of the concerns we raised is not only is looking at readmissions, does it provide sort of this false notion, a false assessment of how hospitals are doing in terms of post-discharge hospital use, but it also may encumber fair comparisons of hospital quality when you're comparing all these hospitals to one another, because a hospital with low readmission rates but high total hospital revisits may not be penalized by the program, while a hospital that has actually lower hospital revisit rates but maybe, you know, readmission rates that are similar to those hospital revisit rates gets penalized by the program. And so, you know, just focusing on readmissions does not provide a comprehensive, holistic view of how a hospital is doing in terms of quality of care.
You mentioned in your discussion that you didn't see any change in 30-day post-discharge mortality among the data set that you looked at, but you cite studies showing increased mortality among patients who were not readmitted after discharge. You know, I found it interesting that the people who were not readmitted and maybe should have been were dying at a faster rate.
Yeah, so, you know, we looked at this period from 2012 to 2015, and, you know, basically our study showed that even though readmissions are going down, rates of coming back to the hospital are going up. And so one of our related questions was, has there been a shift in 30-day deaths associated with the shift in site of care for these patients? And the answer was no, but, you know, that if you look at prior studies, some of which have been done by our group, this is a really controversial topic because prior studies, including, again, full disclosure, one by us, that have assessed longitudinal trends in heart failure mortality have found that when the enactment of the HRP in 2010, as well as implementation of the program in 2012, was associated with an increase in mortality compared to trends prior to the program, so before the program even existed. And much of that increase in mortality actually occurs after the program was first established in 2010, between 2010 and 2012.
And so where was that other study published? The one that we're talking about today was published in the BMJ. But where was that other, the earlier study on, was that heart failure you just mentioned?
So that was a study by our group that was published in JAMA late last year, which basically found that announcement and implementation of the HRP was associated with an increase in not just heart failure mortality, but pneumonia mortality too, compared to trends prior to the program. And that finding has been corroborated by studies from other independent groups. Actually, three other studies have shown that heart failure mortality in particular accelerated or increased after under the HRP relative to trends prior to the program.
So as a clinician, there isn't much that the listener can do clinically about this trend, except, of course, to raise the quality of care. But what would you like to see happen as a result of your study? If something could happen next week, what would you like to see?
First of all, when a program like the HRP is implemented, no matter how well-intentioned it is, you know, we always have to learn from evidence that it comes out about the program and try to improve the program iteratively. And so that hasn't really happened with this program. There have been a lot of studies raising concerns about the program potentially being associated with harm, the program potentially disproportionately penalizing hospitals that care for the poor. And now with our study suggesting that maybe this isn't even the right measure to assess, to evaluate hospital performance and quality. So, you know, if I'm the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, I think they need to actively think about how do we respond to evidence to make this program better for patients, fair for hospitals, to ensure that everyone is incentivized to deliver the best quality of care to our patients. The change that I would make, to the program is I would encourage policymakers to really use a return to hospital measure rather than simply a readmission measure and use that to measure hospital performance as part of the program. And I think a return to hospital measure provides a more comprehensive view of how many times patients are coming back to the hospital after discharge. It would, and that enables us to fairly compare hospital performance. Second, it strengthens the incentive for hospitals to invest in upfront improvements in quality of care, like discharge planning, care transitions, and post-discharge care to reduce the likelihood that a patient needs to come back to the hospital. And third, it removes, by focusing on a return to hospital measure, you reduce that incentive to potentially inappropriately triage patients by, for example, managing a patient who maybe should be an inpatient, but you decide to manage them in an ER and send them home. It sort of removes that incentive. And that's important because frontline clinicians have sort of consistently expressed concern that that's been happening since the program was implemented and that may be harmful for patients.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Wadera, for spending time discussing your work with me today. I know it was at very short notice, and I appreciate the sacrifice of time that you've made to do this.
Thank you very much, Joe. I appreciate it.
That was our 230th Clinical Conversation. The whole searchable collection is available free at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from NEJM Journal Watch. The executive producer is Kristen Kelly. I'm Joe Elia. Thanks for listening.